go ahead and call our next case. The attorneys can come forward on Las Vegas Review-Journal versus City of Henderson, case number 73287. Thank you, Ms. McClatchy. I see Mr. Kennedy approaching, so he's here. And well, I give you a lot of credit braving the snow and ice for the. Very well. Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Ms. McClatchy, would you like to reserve any time in rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve a few minutes for rebuttal.
You may do so. Okay. You can. We'll give Mr. Kennedy a chance to get his files out, and then
sure.
We can get started. Yeah. Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Enabling access to records like the ones at issue in this case is the whole point of Nevada's Public Records Act. The purpose of the NPRA is to promote democracy by facilitating transparency and accountability. The NPRA recognizes that only an informed citizenry can effectively serve as a check on government corruption. Here, the Las Vegas Review-Journal sought records designed to increase public understanding regarding the benefits that a political consultant, Elizabeth Trostberg, got after she helped get elected officials in Henderson elected. In the wake of the RJ's reporting, Ms. Trostberg resigned, by the way. Because Henderson officials, in fact, gave her so much business, there were a lot of records. This, in and of itself, cannot be considered extraordinary use. While it's, in fact, hard to imagine how emails with an outside consultant and spin doctor could implicate privilege or the deliberate process privilege or other protected information, Henderson demanded total fees of almost $6,000 in the deposit.
Ms. McClatchy?
Yes.
No, you're okay. But at the end of the day, they gave it to you for free. They handed you a USB with everything you wanted on it, and they didn't charge you anything. So why should we be deciding the question of the appropriateness of fees in this particular case? Because I'm sure they're going to charge you in the future, but on this one, why should we be hearing this case?
Your Honor, you should be hearing the case today because of exactly what you just said. They could charge fees in the future. Henderson, at the beginning of the case, after litigation commenced, agreed and consented to us amending the petition to seek declaratory relief because they agreed that there were important questions of statewide importance here, and issues do remain with regard to whether or not they can charge those fees. They have revised their policy, issues still remain.
Okay, but why should we hear it in the abstract? Why don't we wait until they actually charge you fees, and we can measure that against a factual circumstance that's actually in front of us?
I think the issue is that then this issue would become capable of repetition, yet evading review, because we could have exactly what happened here, where Mr. Reed, the former city attorney, said, yes, Ms. McClatchy, let's work out, let's let the court resolve these issues. We agree we need clarity, and then we would be required again to spend time and energy litigating the issues, only to then, after hearing on the petition, have the issues removed. That could happen over and over again. We could never get legal clarity on the issues of fees and costs.
Should we be ruling on the policy Henderson had then or the policy it has now?
You should be ruling on the question of what the appropriate fees are that Henderson can charge. So the question is both with regard to the old policy and with regard to the new policy. The question is whether or not Henderson can charge for things like attorney time, whether or not Henderson can charge for keeping records away from the public, whether Henderson can charge for things like supervising inspection. Under the NPRA, the answer to all of those questions is that it cannot. What the only fees that the NPRA allows Henderson to charge are very limited. There are general limits. First, they're only permitted in connection with the request for copies. Second, they're only allowed in connection with providing records, not keeping information away. And there's nothing in the NPRA that says that a governmental entity can subsidize it's in-house counsel, it's city attorneys, by passing along their time in responding to public records requests. There are two separate provisions in the NPRA that allow for costs. One allows for actual costs incurred in connection with photocopying. That's NRS 239.052. The second is the extraordinary use provision, which is NRS 239.455. Henderson misapplied that extraordinary use provision in a number of ways. First, what that provision says is not that they can always charge 50 cents a page, but rather that no fee under the extraordinary use provision can exceed 50 cents a page. Second, the fees must be reasonable. Here, again, it's unclear how the information, the communications with Trosper, an outside consultant, could render tons of privileged documents. And in the end, I believe that there are only 92 listings on their blog and only 92 out of 5,500 some odd emails shows that the privileged information was a limited portion and should have been easily segregated. Henderson is the master of its own record storage and review processes. Henderson is the only party. The public can't do it. Only Henderson can make sure that it's not mixing up privileged and non-privileged information. And we have to, under the NPRA, make sure that we're interpreting all the provisions, including the extraordinary use provision, in a way that furthers access. To further access, we can't pass along a needle in the haystack problem that Henderson appears to have created with these documents. Further, we can't have a situation like we have here, where Henderson, we think, improperly withheld records. We're contesting privilege, yet we're paying for them to assert those privileges that we don't think actually apply. Finally, under the extraordinary use provision, the fees also must be based on the cost that the government actually incurs. I don't think it can be said that when they have an existing city attorney's office and they're not saying that overtime is required, they're not saying that some special computer program needed to be created, they're asking that the Review Journal, as a requester, subsidize that time and those costs.
But they're not, Ms. McCutcheon, because they didn't ask you for any money. At the end of the day, they haven't charged you any money, so you're not subsidizing anything.
That is correct. In this case, Your Honor, but in the future, in regard to any other request, they could do that again. And Henderson has agreed that this is a case of statewide importance. I don't think they've established mootness. Even if they establish mootness, I think that this is a circumstance that's capable of repetition yet evading review. And I think that's especially the case due to the fact public records requests.
So you think they're going to fold each time?
Well, I don't know what they're going to do, but we certainly shouldn't have to go through and incur another tens of thousands of attorney's fees to relitigate this issue, especially in the facts of this case, where Mr. Reed explicitly agreed with me that let's have the district court work this out. We'll consent to you amending your petition. I think especially on the facts of this case, you should not find it to be moot, and you should take up the issue. The other issue, the other reason we're here today, is also because Henderson still, to this day, is withholding a number of records, and it never met its burden with regard to those records. Under the NPRA, as the court well knows, they have a heavy burden in establishing confidentiality. Henderson, in fact, has three distinct obligations with regard to asserting privilege. First, they're supposed to notify the requester of any privileges within 5 days. That's NRS 239.01071D, I believe. They did not do that at all here. Second, they are supposed to generally provide a log. There's not an absolute requirement, but there's a general requirement that in most cases, once litigation commences, they're supposed to provide a log to further the adversarial process. Their log does not do that. It does not include sufficient information. But the more important part is that a log is not evidence. Henderson conflates its obligations with regard to a log, which is designed to further the adversarial process, with its clear evidentiary burden in public records cases. Nothing in the Gibbons case, the Reno v. Gibbons case, which is the case, I believe, that first talked about the requirement of a bomb log, nothing in that case said that the index was a shortcut or a replacement for the evidentiary burden. In fact, in that court's discussion, It noted that in federal cases, in the Vaughn Index context, that often the federal courts, the Vaughn Index stage, involved declarations and affidavits. Nothing in the Gibbons case discussing the Vaughn Index changes the evidentiary burden that a party has under the applicable privilege that a governmental entity is changing.
Ms. McClatchy, yes. Could you clarify something for me? My understanding of the record is that the city of Henderson's city attorney responded within 5 days, telling you that they had identified approximately 5,566 emails alone that were responsive to your request, and they needed time to be able to review those for privilege and confidentiality. If I understand your argument, you're saying that in the absence of asserting privilege and confidentiality over almost 6,000 documents within 5 days, they waive it? Is that what you're saying that statute says?
I believe that NRS 239.0107 does have to be read in order to give it meaning. And I think that at the very least, in that five-day letter, Henderson should have generally discussed the types of privileges that were at hand. It was the city attorney's
office. Well, is the city or any governmental agency given more than 5 days to actually locate the documents, as long as they tell you within the five-day period what they're up to and the time frame that they expect to accomplish it within?
There is a separate provision under 239.0107
that
does say that if you can give a future date certain if you need more time to provide records.
So why wouldn't we apply that statute and that opportunity to identify within the records those records which may be subject to a privilege or a confidence?
Because that's not what that subdivision of NRS 239.0107 says. It says that you can have additional time to produce records. But this court need not even find that Henderson waived because they didn't timely provide the five-day response. They didn't even generally put us on notice of any privilege at that stage. They didn't even provide a suitable law for us to be able to engage in the adversarial process. But more importantly,
the reason they needed the time was to review the documents for privilege?
Yes.
Doesn't that put you on notice? That's what they're thinking about?
But they didn't even talk about what types of privileges there might be. Here in this case, it was city attorney's office.
Requested 200,000 documents. They're supposed to tell you precisely the type of privilege and the type of confidentiality assertion they're going to make under Gibbons as to each of those documents. That seems a little unrealistic application of the statute, particularly in light of the fact that the statute recognizes that the government can respond and say, we're going to give you these documents within a certain time frame.
I think in this case, because it was a city attorney and the emails were all from the city attorney's office that it deemed to be privileged, and there were only, I think, 72 of them, they could have at least put us on notice. But more importantly, Your Honor, what they didn't do in this case is the most important part, and that's establish any of their claims of privilege by a preponderance of the evidence.
Well, that's a different question. You're disputing the third privilege log, I think is what it's characterized. And the language used in it and the district court's review of it. Now, that you raise an interesting question. The privilege log in Gibbons was more circumspect or more general, I should say, than the one that's present in this case. Did the district court look at each of these documents in camera as Gibbons had suggested?
The district court did not look at them in camera. And I think the more important point is Henderson never tried to come forward with any evidence. Under the deliberative process privilege, for example, that generally requires an evidentiary showing. In the Gibbons case, they remanded. Here, though, Henderson has long been on notice of the requirements under the NPRA, including under the revisions that require a preponderance of the evidence to establish a claim of confidentiality. And the appropriate thing to do for this court, they had the opportunity to revise their log numerous times. They had the opportunity to provide evidence. They never met that burden. And the appropriate thing now is to require that they now produce the records. That happened, I think, in the DR Partners case, in which the county asserted the deliberative process privilege but never met its evidentiary burden. And I think the issue with Henderson's read of Gibbons and approach to the log is they think that the log shortcuts and obviates its obligations under the MPRA
which
to provide evidence.
This argument leads me to one further question. What's the remedy then on appeal? If we agreed with you that there was a failure to demonstrate the deliberative process privilege, for example, here, it seems like the district court accepted the attorney-client and work product privilege because it seemed to fit within the same showing that had been made in the Gibbons case. But let's take the deliberative process privilege. Where the showing hasn't been made, is this a case that should be remanded to the district court for that showing or that in-camera inspection to take place? Or has it just been waived by the city and they should have to produce the documents?
I think they should have to produce the documents. That's what this court did in the DR Partners case, where deliberative process was at issue, for example. The governmental entity had failed to meet its evidentiary burden in that case, and this court ordered that the documents, that it be remanded so that the governmental entity, the county, be required to produce records. And I see I'm running out of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, well, you did run out, but I'll give you 2 minutes, and then we'll
Thank
give
you.
Mr. Kennedy 17 minutes.
May it please the court, Dennis Kennedy for the city of Henderson. Pretty clear from the briefs, the argument, the court's questions, we've got really three issues here. The first one, we call it the merits issue, and that is District Judge Thompson's conclusion after hearing argument, looking at all the evidence, that the city met its obligations under the Public Records Act. And he said clearly they did. There was an offer to inspect the records. The records were inspected. Transcript is clear from the hearing that no copies were requested after the review journal spent 3 days on a computer looking at the records. No copies were requested. And so that was the end of the inspection. Then we went to court for the hearing, and Judge Thompson asked several times, did you request any copies? Answer, no. And he finally said, well, do you want the 69,000 pages? And the RJ said, no. And he said words to the effect of, then what are we fighting about? And they said, well, we should have access to those. And he finally turned to me and he said, will you just give those to them? And I said, yes, we'll put them on a thumb drive. Costs $2.39. The city will absorb that. And here they are. So then Judge Thompson said, isn't that the end of this matter? There is no charge, and you're getting the records even though you never asked for them. Response was no, because the city said, let's take the privilege law. We have the privilege logs to deal with. So there's a back and forth on the privilege logs. And what I said was, under the Gibbons case, this court said, look, we know what a Vaughan index is, where you have to have a detailed affidavit for every document. This court said, look, we don't require that. Tell us what the document is, tell us the statute that you're claiming, and give us an explanation so we can tell what it is. With respect to the privilege documents, the privilege log contains document Bates numbered so-and-so, this date from this lawyer to this other person, client, discussing the following matter, citing NRS 49.095. That's all that's required. I mean, we've all done a lot of privilege logs. That's what's required. With respect to the attorney-client privilege log, Judge Thompson said, look, that looks like it's sufficient to me. And he asked the review journal, do you have anything that indicates that there's anything wrong with any of this, that any of these privileges are wrongly claimed? Do you have anything? And the answer was no. We then went on to the deliberative privilege logs, and there are 11 of those. What is very important here for this court is the argument made by the Review Journal is, well, there was just an assertion and there was no demonstration of the validity of that privilege. That is incorrect. In the briefs that were filed with the district court, the Review Journal made a general objection to the privilege log and the privilege withholding and identified several documents that they said claim of privilege was insufficient. And this is in the brief that the City of Henderson filed in front of Judge Thompson. It's at Joint Appendix 213. It starts. What we did in that brief was, starting specifically on Joint Appendix 214, is we took every document that the RJ complained of and in, I'll say, some excruciating detail, starting on Joint Appendix 215, we went through every one of those documents and said, here's the one you have a problem with. Here is a detailed explanation of why there's attorney-client privilege. We then turned to the deliberative process privilege, beginning on Joint Appendix 216, took every document that the RJ objected to, the withholding on a basis of deliberative privilege, and went through those documents in excruciating detail, saying, each one that you have objected to, we will meet that objection with the following information. So when we get to the hearing in front of Judge Thompson, what he says is to the RJ, look, this is what's happened. You've raised these. I have, you know, I'm looking at the brief. I have detailed responses to it. And under the jurisprudence of this court, that's what's required. So he says at Joint Appendix 432, I'm looking at the transcript. He says, okay, how do I resolve this? And the RJ says, Your Honor, you have to take all the documents in camera to review them to see if they have been properly withheld. So we met our burden of coming forward and responding to a question about the privilege. Judge Thompson said, in essence, that these look pretty good to me, these privilege logs. What do you want me to do? And the RJ said, take every document in camera and look through them to see if you can find some privileges in there or some improperly withheld.
And how many documents was that?
There were 91 documents. 80 attorney-client, 11 deliberative privilege. And Judge Thompson responded to that. This is Joint Appendix 442, and he said, look, this is what the Gibbons case requires that they do. And I've looked at this, and he says, unless there's some indication that the city has misrepresented what these are, I think this is an adequate description of the privileges.
As to the deliberative process, that's not a privilege that's based in statute, correct?
That's correct.
So does the Gibbons case require that there be a weighing of the claimed privilege against the public interest in access?
That really is the Clark County School District case. That's a much more recent case. I mean, that's dead on.
Okay.
Yeah, and it says when you have that, there has to be a weighing. Okay? So what have we got in this case?
Right.
We have the assertion of the privilege by the city. We have the RJ coming forward and saying, we're not buying it. We think this is insufficient. That's the objection. We're not buying it. We respond with detailed explanations as to every document that they raise. So what happens is now there is a weighing of the evidence. What you have is the assertion of a privilege backed up by a really good discussion of the document, the privilege, and why it applies. That's in the brief that I was referring to earlier at Joint Appendix 216. So you weigh that comprehensive explanation against.
So if I could, Mr. Kennedy, let's take, for example, document number 7718. That document was a document to which the city asserted a deliberative process privilege, and the description on the third privilege log read, draft document reflecting deliberations, thoughts, and impressions concerning changes to organizational structure within the city manager's office. In the pleading that you filed, how did you expand on that description in order to facilitate the judge's ability to conduct a DR partner's balancing test?
Well, we go on to, we repeat that, and we go on to say these documents contain suggestions reflecting personal opinions of the writer rather than a final decision made by the city. And so this is someone, the writer of the document, responding and saying, here's what I think of those proposed changes.
I just want to understand your argument as it relates to the 11 deliberative process privilege assertions.
Right, because that's the heart of the deliberative process privilege.
Yeah, but apparently then what you're saying is that the judge was sufficiently satisfied with your additional or expanded explanation that he chose not to examine the documents themselves in camera.
That is exactly what happened. But once that was in front of him, he said to the Review Journal's counsel, and I read it, he said, unless there's some indication that this is not true, I think this satisfies the privilege law or the privilege requirements. And there's no response. The only response is, we think you ought to take 91 documents and look at them. And, of course, if that's the rule.
91,000, you mean, or 91?
Well, yes. There are 91 documents, and I don't think the RJ was saying look at 69,000 pages.
Okay.
They said look at these 91 documents. That's probably 300 pages. But if that's the rule, then why are we doing privilege laws? Let's just show up in chambers with banker's boxes saying, you know, there's a dispute over this, so, Your Honor, you have to look at this. And I do make a comment in here somewhere where I said this would be a bad fate for trial judges everywhere. That's how we handled this, to just have a dispute and say to the judge, here they are, you have to decide. And, of course, Judge Thompson said, look, I'm not going to do that. This is sufficient, in my view, unless we have a dispute over this.
Mr. Kennedy, is it, I'm sorry, sir, as it relates to the deliberative process privilege or assertion, I should say, even if it's true, what you said in your brief and in the log, on a balance, the court could order disclosure. I mean, the court should do its balancing test in that instance. Don't you believe so?
That's right, but that balancing test has to be based on evidence, Your Honor. And that's what Judge Thompson was saying. What we said is, look, here's what it is. Here's the topic. It's pre-decisional, and it's the opinion of one person within the city on these proposed changes. And so once you have that, if you're going to do a balancing test, you can say, okay, I'll take that. Okay, that's what I've got here in this hand. Las Vegas Review Journal, what do you have? Because I have to balance these interests. What do you have? The answer was, well, if you look at Clark County School District, in that case, you had an articulated interest on the one hand, a well-articulated interest on the other hand, arguments to the court about how that balance should be struck, and the court finally saying, okay, I'm going to have to look at these documents to resolve this. Here, there's nothing to balance, or if there is, the balance on the city's side of the scale carries the day, because all you have on the other side is, when asked, what do you have? The other side of the scale is, we're just not buying it. Well, That's not how it works.
But it's more than just a determination of whether the deliberative process interest, or what if we call it a privilege, not just whether it applies to the document, but then even if it does apply, to balance that interest then in keeping it confidential against the public interest in access to public records. I mean, did anyone do that balance?
It is apparent that Judge Thompson did that, because what he had the briefs, and he had the arguments, and he had the descriptions of the documents, and then he had the RJ's position. And what he said then was at Joint Appendix 432, he said, look, unless you've got something, I take that back, at page 442, unless there's some indication that the city's misrepresented these, I think this is sufficient. So he did do that, and he had all of that in front of him. The question is, did he abuse his discretion in doing that? It's possible to make that argument if there is some specific articulated interest on the other side from the RJ other than the public has a right to see this, because the public doesn't have a right to see it. It has to establish a need balanced against the existence of the privilege itself, because if there is just an undifferentiated right of the public to know everything, then they win the balancing test every time. And here, you got to come forward with something. And they didn't. And that's how Judge Thompson resolved this.
Isn't the presumption under the statute in favor of disclosure with your client's obligation to establish otherwise?
That's not quite correct. The statute contains an enumeration of about 450 privileges, including the attorney-client privilege. And then there is another category of privilege, and that's the deliberative process privilege. So the test for deliberative process is, it's a balancing test. And there's essentially a public right to know, but then in Clark County School District, this court said, yeah, but that's counterbalanced by other things. So there really isn't I know that what the statute says, there's a presumption that everything's available unless there's a privilege. Right. And so what we have is, and Clark County School District made that really plain, yeah, there's a presumption that you get it, but on the other hand, there are other interests that have to be weighed against that. In that case, it was personal privacy interests and that sort of thing.
And in this case, sir, what was the interest that clearly outweighed the public's interest in these documents under deliberative privilege? Process, I'm sorry.
To go back to the one that Justice Hardesty talked about, that was an individual who was a city employee, an executive-level employee, saying, I disagree with these proposed changes in the city manager's office for the following reasons. There are a lot of cases out there on this that say you have to protect the personal views and opinions of these people who are commenting, because if those things are going to get out in the public, these people aren't going to talk, because that stuff then gets out in public, and they're humiliated or they're criticized, even though the views that they held were held sincerely. And that's the interest, and that's to promote the free flow of information and ideas within the government. And courts say that repeatedly. If you don't have that, if those things are all subject to being made public, people aren't going to talk.
Thank you very much, okay, Mr. Kennedy. Ms. McClatchy. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Kennedy is asking this court to rewrite the public records law and take out NRS 239.113, which explicitly mandates that they have the burden of establishing by a preponderance of the evidence that a record is confidential. CCSD did not rewrite the Public Records Act. It did not change the applicable burdens. In fact, that opinion makes very clear that 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 case needed to be seen within the existing framework. It did lay out a specific way to approach a specific type of issue, which is redactions in the interest of privacy, which are not applicable to the arguments that they're making today about deliberative process and attorney-client privilege. Those are the two main areas that they are asserting. They never came forward with any evidence. Attorney argument cannot be considered evidence. They say we made it clear in our briefs. They say Judge Thompson must have figured it out. They have the burden of establishing two things, both by a preponderance of the evidence. First, that an interest in confidentiality actually applies. They never got there. There was not a scintilla of evidence produced in the district court. Then they have the burden of overcoming the presumption in favor of access. The CCSD case did not change the fact, and it can't because the NPRA says what it says. There's a presumption in favor of access. That presumption in favor of access is designed to further democracy itself. They have to overcome that presumption. They have to do it by evidence. They asserted that the Review Journal never explained and articulated any interest in access. That is not true. Our briefs sufficiently detail a lot of arguments in favor of access in this case. But we didn't need to. There's a presumption in favor of access, and they had the burden of overcoming that presumption of access. They never did it. Their log is entirely conclusory. They even seek to protect a log that they, an item that they haven't even explained who it was disseminated to. This does not comport with basic requirements of a privilege log. They don't comport with basic evidentiary requirements for a deliberative process privilege. Privileges are always supposed to be interpreted narrowly, especially in the context of public records.
Glad
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. Again, as usual, excellent arguments and briefs. So we will
Thank
take
you.
This matter under submission. We'll have a very brief recess, and we'll come back for a hearing upon the administrative document.